chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I am delighted to have Alan Morris on the show today. Alan is the chairman and CEO of the Alan Morris Company. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. So, Alan, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. My friend, I'm so glad that we could make this happen.
It's so great to be here with you today.
I always want to tell our listeners, Alan, how we get connected, right? Because I want people to understand you never know where a connection and a friendship is going to lead, you know, because we've done a few things together now and we'll continue to do that. But we originally got connected through YPO and specifically the Christian Fellowship Network within YPO.
That's right.
You were kind of on the ground floor of networks before networks were cool.
That's right. We didn't even call them networks back then, but 25 years ago, we started a thing called the YPO Fellowship Forum and kicked off our first conference called Leading by Vision and Values. And we had the privilege of chairing the 25th anniversary Leading by Vision and Values conference last month. And it was very exciting.
It was. We had so much fun. It was great speakers and just kind of a transformational weekend. So that was really cool for you to kind of come full circle. But, you know, you live in Coral Gables or Miami, the Miami area. You're married to your beautiful wife, June. You've got four kids, Olivia, Liesl, Mallory, and Spencer. We're going to talk a little bit about them because I know three of them are in the business. But I kind of want you to take us back, Alan, just a little bit about how you grew up. Now, did you grow up in Florida or did you grow up in Atlanta?
I grew up in Miami, Florida, Coral Gables, the suburb of Miami, went away to military school at the ripe old age of 14 in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and then went to Georgia Tech, where I crammed 4 years into five, later went on to Harvard Business School.
You were just trying to extend the experience. It was such a great experience. Well,
it wasn't planned that I would extend it to 5 years, but 3 weeks before graduation, I was taking off in an airplane out of Atlanta as pilot. And I had an engine failure, had to make an emergency crash landing on Interstate 20. That changed my plans rather abruptly, broke my back in the plane crash, and was paralyzed from the waist down. And after three surgeries, started getting the use of my legs back and feeling in my legs, and got a privilege of living in a body cast for 9 months.
You know, I was kind of laughing when I read this. You know, you said you practiced over and over. You asked Tom, who was an Army pilot in Vietnam, what do you do if you have engine failure? And obviously, this was before you had engine failure, right? He said, well, you turn on your landing lights and you look for a clearing to make your emergency landing. And then you said, well, what do you do if you can't see a clear place to land? And he said, well, you're going to want to turn off your landing lights. And you said you were so confused. You're like, what? He said, because you don't want to see what's going to happen next.
Another example of sick pilot humor.
Yeah. And you've had other things in your life where it's just really seriously like a miracle that you're still standing. And we'll kind of talk about that. But let's go back. Your dad is L. Alan Morris. And I love learning about your dad, Alan. I mean, my goodness, he was like such a pioneer and a visionary. And I would love for you just to kind of tell our listeners a little bit about, was it the Brickell Building?
Brickell Avenue in Miami, which is now the center of the financial district in Miami and the center for international banking, the second largest international banking center in America after New York.
But people thought he was kind of crazy. Right? I mean, they were like, why would you do that?
Oh, people made fun of him when he was building the first office building on Brickell Avenue. Why would you build a building on the wrong side of the Miami River? Who wants to go way down there on the other side of the river to Brickell Avenue? And now Brickell Avenue is the densest population south of Manhattan. We actually recently finished developing a 58-story condominium and luxury hotel in that area in West Brickell, on land that we bought 40 years ago in Brickell. It's the center of everything in Miami.
So your dad really did have a vision, you know, for the future. It's like he had a crystal ball or something. I don't know, Alan. But, you know, you said you never really grew up thinking that you would come into the business. I mean, did you have something that you wanted to be?
Well, actually, I had gone through a kind of transformation in my life when I was away at military school. It was academically very, very demanding. And I began questioning and challenging everything. And I was taught to do that. And one of the things that I challenged was the whole matter of faith. I came to the conclusion that the Christian faith was too hard to actually live out. And I felt like it was an impossible proposition. And I decided that if I was to honestly call a spade, as it were, that I would have to say I was not a Christian, but I was an agnostic. I wasn't an atheist because I felt like to be an atheist, you have to claim all knowledge in the universe to conclusively say that God does not exist. And even in my sophomoric arrogance, I couldn't bring myself to that. But I said God may exist or he may not. I don't know. It may be possible to know God in a personal way or not. I don't know. And so that was the conclusion that I had come to. Until I had met people that were not a goofy, silly Christians, but were actually very cool, knowledgeable, and engaging people that were not intimidated by my agnosticism. And they said, Alan, we would challenge you to reconsider intellectually the possible truth of the claims of Jesus of Nazareth. And I said, well, that's an interesting challenge, but you're going to start quoting Bible verses to me, and I don't believe the Bible.
Right.
And they said, you know, that's not a problem. I said, oh, really? Your source document is not a problem? I said, no, we would challenge you to examine the evidence for the reliability and the authenticity of the New Testament documents. And I said, now that is an interesting challenge, and I actually think I might do that. And I actually accepted their challenge, and I began studying. I figure it would eliminate any winces of conscience from my past or any questions that people would raise about the Bible if I really, really academically was soundly informed and educated on the evidences for why the Bible was not legitimate. And my research led into archaeology. It led into secular history, the eyewitness accounts of the life of Jesus, and the changed lives of people in the first century, and what could be responsible for that. And ultimately, the legal evidence for the resurrection of Jesus of Nazareth. The more I studied the evidence, the more angry I got. This is not at all what I had heard from my teachers or professors or other people asking questions. The evidence was disturbing to me. It was so overwhelmingly convincing of the life, teachings, death, and resurrection of Jesus that I couldn't, in good conscience, just throw it out. And I realized that Shakespeare was right when he said, to thine own self be true. I was not being true to what I now knew. It took a point in time for me to say, I cannot turn my back on this either. I'm going to be dishonest to myself, or it's worth committing my life to, and committing my life to the real living Jesus of Nazareth.
That's a whole podcast in and of itself. I mean, wow, I've never heard that story, but I love it.
So I ended up writing a book on that subject too, which is called A Critical Look at Christianity, A Skeptic's Approach.
Awesome. Well, I'll have to check that one out.
But the new book is really about what you do when you find yourself facing the challenges, the very real challenges of life that we all face, because all of us find ourselves in the weeds in our personal life, in our marriage, in our family, with our children, in our business, in our relationships, with wounds and injuries we have from our childhood or experiences that we had in our past that we think we may have put behind us and gotten over that, but then discover that those things have more power over our lives than we ever imagined.
Yeah, we'll get into that, but you call it shadow work, you know, and All In is your new book. And I want to totally dig into this. But for our listeners that may not know, so you came into the business in 1974. 1980, though, you took over as the CEO. What did you know when you were 28 years old?
I thought I knew everything, you know. It's kind of like the old bumper sticker, hire a teenager while they still know everything.
Right.
My father came to me one day, and he was just tired. He was ready to retire. And I had been fully engaged in every aspect of the business, very intensely working 15 to 20 hour days. He said, you know, I think it's time for you to become president of the company. And in my humble way, I said, well, Dad, you know, I don't want to become president of the company unless I'm also the CEO, because I don't want people thinking that you're really running things behind the scenes. And so it undermines my authority. He said, let me think about that. I'll get back to you. So he went home and talked to my mother. And the next day we got together and he said, okay, we're going to make you president and CEO of the company. I'm going to sell the company to you, so you'll own it. And I said, great. We did all that. And after I was installed as the president and CEO, he and my mother got on the QE2 and went to Europe. And I thought, whoa.
Wait a minute.
It really is all my responsibility. I can't even call him. This was before there were cell phones.
Funny. I wonder if that was by design.
Knowing my father, it was clearly by design.
I love it. For our listeners who may not know, you guys are the largest commercial real estate. You do property management. You build beautiful buildings. You've had close to 100 office, retail, industrial projects. And then our listeners would recognize these. You've built a lot of the corporate headquarters that our listeners would probably recognize. But one of the ways that Spencer, your son, categorizes or differentiates you guys from like other builders is you say you build beautiful, architecturally distinct and bold buildings. And I know even your corporate headquarters has won a lot of awards. And I think there was a Spanish architecture influence.
It's inspired by the great cathedrals of Spain, and we've won 10 awards for that building.
So listeners, go and Google that building. It is beautiful.
Alhambra Towers in Coral Gables, Florida.
I have read a lot, and you guys have got such a strong culture. And of course, your dad, you know, it was all about integrity and honesty. And, you know, I've listened to some of your client testimonials. But, you know, I listened to several of the colleagues talking about the company on your 60th anniversary. And here's some of the things that I heard. The company is innovative, creative, inspiring, has a legacy of high integrity, strong culture, family first. You know, and I heard people say they are so proud to work at the Allen Morse Company. And every time you guys have a new project go up, there's this sense of pride with your people. So this strong culture, I mean, how important is that? I mean, Alan, I think it's paramount these days, right?
Culture is everything. Interestingly, we went through a transition in our company. Yes, we always embraced the importance of honesty and integrity in everything that we do. And my father used to express it this way. If they go to any real estate company in Florida, they're going to get an answer. But I want them to know that when they come to the Allen Morse Company, that we're going to tell them the truth, whether it's to our disadvantage or not. And we'll be distinguished by that in the real estate business, because there's not a lot of real estate companies that are known for that.
Right.
And so not only is it good for our conscience, but it's also good for our culture in the company. The people in our company know this is an honorable and a safe place to work. And also, it's good business. Because people want to know that they're going to be treated the way they would like to be treated. And so that's been the basis of our company. But we made a change in a lot of the direction of the company around 2000 when I designed the Alhambra Towers building.
You know, top of mind for every CEO right now is the war on talent, you know, and finding the people. And so strong cultures do attract the people that you need, which is important, you know, for the organization to carry out the mission, right? You know, this is cool because now we're into the third generation, because I think Mallory, Liesl, and Spencer are all, or at one time, they're all in the company, right? And Mallory, I heard her talking about you, and she said, even when she was a little girl and you guys would be in Paris, you were always pointing out to her the architectural details. And so she grew up with that appreciation, you know, of architecture and the love, you know, of buildings and that. But how has that been, Alan? Because I just recently read a stat, 70% of family-owned businesses fail or they're sold before the second generation takes over. 10% won't even make it to the third generation.
Yes.
So that is pretty incredible to now be on the third generation. I mean, what would you say would be the secret of that with you guys?
Well, I could see how that happened with us, because I had no intention necessarily of going into the family business when I got out of college. I didn't know what I would do. I had some other plans, and my children did not either. When I went through my transformation in my life, beginning in 2000, when I was 47 years old and took my sabbatical, we realized that I was working really, really hard, but not loving it anymore. And that I needed to reconsider my life mission and the mission of the company that would be so exciting that it would give me joy to wake up in the morning and go to work, that I would be excited about the next project. And I came to the conclusion that if I had to build another efficient office building box, I would just die. I would never do another one. I'd rather close down the company. And so when our executive team got together, Lisa, and we considered what did we want our new mission statement of the company to be, we said, let's simplify it so we all know what it is. We came to the conclusion we wanted it to be three words. We wanted it to inspire, impress, and improve. We want to inspire people with the beauty of our projects, impress them with the excellence of their experience, and we want to improve the lives of everyone we touch. And if a project doesn't impress us and inspire us and improve the lives of other people, we're not going to build it. We'll go on to the next one. It doesn't matter if it's the most profitable project on earth. If it doesn't inspire, impress, and improve the lives of others, we've decided we will just pass respectfully.
Yeah.
And that changed the direction of our company, and it changed the quality of what we built, and it changed the inspiring nature of what we delivered in communities. And that is important because that inspired my son to want to come to work for the company, and my daughter and my other daughter to want to work for the company, because they saw they could be a part of something that really turned them on.
I love that. Well, we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Alan Morris.
Are you a rising IT leader? Could you benefit from a network of like-minded peers? Let me introduce you to the St. Louis Technology Leadership Experience. This one-of-a-kind program gathers cohorts of IT professionals for three workshops: peer small group problem solving, one-on-one mentoring by IT executives, and multiple networking events. You'll be prepared for your next steps as an IT leader by gaining core leadership competencies and a strong, powerful network of peers. To apply for our next TechLX cohort, visit tpi.co/TLX.
So welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Alan Morris. So Alan, thank you for that little cliffhanger there, but we're all still hanging on the cliff. You kind of talked a little bit about some sort of sabbatical when you were 47. I want you to tell our listeners what happened when you were 47, Alan.
Well, I was going and blowing and had a lot of success in the business and a lot of exciting things going on. I was on the board of directors of the Chamber of Commerce and the Orange Bowl Committee and lots of other boards, and very engaged in the community. Had four wonderful children. I was having trouble with one of my children who was having a hard time, and my wife was having problems, but I figured she was getting over it. She was getting through whatever it was she was going through. And I found myself dealing with my daughter, who had been suspended from one school and then expelled from another school. And I had to put her in a tough lockdown school in Vermont. And I thought, driving back to the Burlington airport alone in the car, I just wept. I felt like the world's worst father. Like, what had I done? How did I fail so miserably as a father? I tried so hard to be, you know, a great dad. And I felt like a total failure leaving my precious daughter in this godforsaken place because my wife couldn't handle things at home with her. And I didn't know what else to do. About 2 weeks later, I started having headaches, not your garden variety headaches, but really severe headaches, nonstop, 24 hours a day. And I started taking 2 extra strength Excedrin every 4 hours through the day and through the night. And I said, now this is not right, obviously. So I went to the head of neurosurgery at my hospital. I asked him what we needed to do, what was causing this. He said, well, I'll tell you right now, Alan, with your symptoms, you've got a brain tumor. So let's do the MRI and let's see where your tumor is, and then we'll know what our options are. So I said, okay, I guess I can handle this like I've handled everything else in my life, and maybe my life is not going to be very long now, but I'll deal with it. He came back after 3 weeks of testing and a CAT scan, and he was like a dejected child. He came into the examining room. He said, Alan, I've met with the radiologist. I've examined the films myself, and your tumor is not there. I said, well, why are you calling it my tumor? He didn't have a sense of humor. Uh-huh. He said, well, I can give you beta blockers and muscle relaxants and pain meds so you won't be in any pain. I said, are you serious? Is that the best you got?
Yes.
He said, I don't know what else to tell you. And I realized that the commonality of this problem was me. And I had to get to the bottom of how I must be causing these headaches that he could see no physical cause for. So I decided I needed to go all in to look at the truth about myself. And that required my stepping out of my company for a few months. I hired one of my former executives to come in as managing director while I took a 3-month sabbatical. And that sabbatical, I was hired a counselor and a coach to work with and help me figure out, of all the things that I knew a lot about, and I felt like I knew a lot about a lot of things, I didn't know about me. And so I began that journey, and it began with journaling, and it began with exercises that my coach would give me to do. So that began my new journey on those 3 months that ended up turning into an amazing 3 years.
This is chapter 1 of your book. You had said there were some insights that came out of this, and you said, you can go amazingly far in life, winning trophies left and right without ever reckoning with the actual cost of your success and who's paying the price. Another quote that you have that I just love, I told you, I love this quote, scaling the ladder of accomplishment only to discover the ladder is leaning against the wrong wall. You're kind of a little bit of an achievement junkie, you know, kind of a little bit of addiction to achievement and accomplishment.
Yeah.
And boy, I've had to do a lot of work on myself and peeling back the onion with that.
But you know, that is true of so many people that are high achievers, whether they're in show business, whether they're in politics, whether they're in business, they're driven by something inside that is often related to a childhood experience. And sometimes that childhood experience is not a pleasant one. Sometimes it's a childhood wound or a trauma that they experienced in their life. Although I grew up in a very loving home, my father was very ambitious and he had to travel a lot for business. And that's when they decided, rather than leave me at home with a babysitter, they wanted me to go to a great school, and they sent me to a boarding school in another state when I was 14 years old. I knew they did not abandon me. I knew that they loved me, but it felt like abandonment,
right?
Because I was so lonely.
Yeah.
And they didn't have time to come and visit me at school. I would come home for holidays and summertime, but it drove me to want to prove myself, to not fail, and to do things worthy of their attention, to be seen by my mother and father, my father particularly, to prove to him that I was good enough. And working with hundreds of men, Lisa, the unifying theme that I hear when we speak privately, confidentially, is they carry this wound within them that, number one, they're not good enough. And number two, they're afraid of being found out that they're not good enough. And it seems incredible that someone could be so successful or so accomplished and still carry that wound. But that wound, wanting to prove yourself to be good enough, is the thing that's made them successful. Another way to say it is their scar becomes their star. And that was true with me.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, we get to a point where the things that we're doing to succeed and achieve and the wound that we're carrying is not serving us anymore. And it can become self-destructive. And it had become self-destructive with me and created a really broken relationship with my wife and with my children and conflicts in my relationships with some of my senior executives at the time. And this is what I see happens in so many men and women in leadership positions. That's what drives them and what we see helps to bring them down or cause them to crash in some way or another.
You know, what I really want our listeners to understand is that Alan has a new book called All In, and I had the privilege of reading this book before it was even published. Or is it officially out?
It'll be released on May 3rd by Simon & Schuster. You can get the book All In at any place that books are sold. And also it's available on Audible for an audiobook if you'd rather listen in the car. And it's also available on Kindle.
Well, I highly recommend our listeners getting the book because Alan is so vulnerable and authentic. And I mean, you just lay it all out here, Alan. I mean, there's some hard things. I mean, you not only survived a plane crash, a possible brain tumor, you had some hard things. I mean, chapter 8 made me sad, you know, to see what you went through there.
Well, all of us have experienced betrayals. I happen to have a very dramatic couple of betrayals, but all of us experience betrayals in our lives, and we need to know how to deal with those so they don't ruin our lives, so that these challenges and traumas that we will all experience in our lives can become the jet fuel to launch us into transformation of the life we want rather than destroy us.
You know, the book title is All In, and here's your subtitle, How to Risk Everything for Everything That Matters. Tell me about the title and the subtitle.
Okay, sure.
And why did you subtitle it that way?
Well, it's really a book about transformation, how to refind your joy and reconnect with your creativity and your power. And we call it All In because in order to go all in, like I did, you have to go all in to look into the truth about your own life, to look at those parts of your subconscious that you just can't see. In the same way you can't give yourself a haircut, you need somebody else to see behind you where you can't see, because these are our blind spots that we all have. And secondly, all in is anything that's really important, that's really worthwhile, you need to do it all in. You need to go all the way with commitment to do something. And because the journey into transformation in our lives, to the journey to joy and creativity and reconnecting with your power is worth going all in for.
I just really highly encourage our listeners to get the book and to dig in. You know, you talk a lot about discovering your life purpose. I've been ruminating on this a lot recently. I think a lot of people, though, I think a lot of times we just get on autopilot and we don't really stop and think about that. But you know what? We as individuals have purposes and organizations have purposes. And I say, gosh, as an organization, especially in this great resignation, the thing that people are saying is they don't see meaning. They don't see purpose in their work anymore. You know, it's not fulfilling to them, you know? And so I'm like, boy, as an organization, we need to be so clear about our purpose and we need to be communicating that to our people so that they can catch that vision too. You know, so you talk about life purpose, you talk a lot about turning your passion into your purpose. And I love your whole martial arts story.
Yeah, in the process of my sabbatical and becoming more body-mind aware, I started to get a little training in martial arts and got so excited about it, I went on to become a 4th-degree Taekwondo master.
Yeah, and you're the guy that I want walking down the street with me.
I'll teach you how to run away from a fight. That's what I'll teach you.
There you go.
That's what I do.
There you go. But yeah, this book, I think it's going to encourage you. I think it's going to give you guidance and some tools. You know, there's free online resources too. And the other part that I really need to say is Alan is doing all-in retreats now. which are transformational. I've had several of my friends go to those retreats and they just come back just talking about how transformational it is. So I do at the end, I want you to tell our listeners how they could get involved in that, Alan, if they're interested.
The place to really connect is allinbook.com. You can go online and get information about the book and about the online resources available on allinbook.com.
You know, and when Alan's talking about resources, there really are resources. At the end of every chapter, there are reflection discussion questions. And then you've got a QR code there that you can just scan and get more free resources.
And Lisa, we've also got a reader's guide in the back of the book. So our journey is best if we can do it in the company of a small group of confidential friends that'll commit to confidentiality, that'll commit to one another and commit to this deeper discussion in our lives. And so we make a reader's guide available to where you can discuss with your private group the questions in each one of the chapter. And these kind of discussions can launch your own private forum group of committed friends, committed to confidentiality, committed to go deep, and committed to show up authentically.
I love it. Well, Alan, this is called Something Extra. And I have to ask you, what do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
Passion. Passion. Without passion and vision, there is no leadership. And one of the things that I found in this transformation that I have experienced is a reconnection to my passion and my vision.
The URL is allinbook.com, right?
That's it. Allinbook.com. That's where you can get all the information about the book, the resources, the reader's guide, the discussion questions, all of those things are available. And we're continuing to make more and more resources and webinars and courses available online. The sales from the book are 100% nonprofit. I get nothing from the sale of the books. It all goes to charity and a nonprofit organization to help make more of these resources available to more people.
Well, Alan, I love what you're doing. Thank you so much for being on the show today. Thank you for being my friend, and tell your sweet wife, June, that I said hello. And I cannot wait for our listeners to hear this because I know that it's going to be transformational for them. I know that it will be. So I appreciate you making the time.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.